Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb@rte.ie.
Horror movies are having a moment. They have emerged as the unlikely saviours of the cinema box office this summer. Seems cinema-goers can't get enough of zombies and vampires and ghouls. Well, I'm joined by two people who are not a bit surprised by this development. We have horror consultant Dr. Sarah Cleary. We'll find out what that means in just a minute. And Brian Lloyd, who's an entertainment journalist. Thank you both for being here. Why do you think it is that horror appeals when the big budget blockbusters, and they're making a lot of those at the moment as well, why is the horror stuff appealing more than the big huge ones they're spending a fortune on?
Well, in terms of the studio at least, the reality of it is that horror films are very, very cheap to make. Like, you take, for example, Superman, which is in cinemas this Friday, that cost is somewhere in the region of about $250 million. Then if you look at, say, you know, Final Destination Bloodlines, for example, that can cost anywhere between 10 to 15 million. So studios are able to basically put in a very small investment and the audience is already there. Mm-hmm. People will go to see a horror film because, you know, for one, it's different from, say, you know, a remake or a sequel or a blockbuster, or like a big comic book movie. It generally tends to be a bit more inventive. And also as well, just the idea of horror itself is able to address, you know, social and political kind of themes in a very unique way by kind of bringing in subtext and all the rest of it. So even for people who would come at it from a bit more of an elevated standpoint, they'll get something out of it. And for people who just want, you know, a decent time in the cinema, it's just something entertaining that they'll know they'll get. They'll know they'll be scared by the end of it if it works.
Do they have mass appeal though? Or is it not very Marmite-y? You know, you're either into horror or you're not. Whereas something that has mass appeal might just attract a bigger audience.
Yeah, but again, I would argue that some people, like, if you're going to see a horror film, you know what you're getting.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of way. So if you want to be scared, if you want to see a horror film, you can go see one and you'll get it. You know exactly what you're getting. In terms of, say, a comic book movie, I mean, you know, Superman, as an example, I mean, this is the second or third Superman film in, say, in the last 10 to 15 years. You had the Henry Cavill ones. So people feel like they already know what they're getting, but they feel like they've seen it again and again and again. Mm-hmm. So there's a level of repetitiveness, I would say, to kind of blockbuster films.
Where you're getting newness with horror.
With a horror film, yeah. I mean, because they're so prodigious, because there's so many of them, each one of them has to have a very specific, a very unique take mm-hmm. on it. They have to be different because they make so many of them. So, but just by its nature, it is unique.
Sarah, you better tell us what a horror consultant is before we get your view on what's going on.
Well, first and foremost, Cara, I think what I like to see my role is I'm an advocate for horror. And I'm not just an advocate for horror in terms of a bloody fantastic night out at the cinema, because again, as Brian was saying, people, horror does have mass appeal because people go to watch a horror film for multiple different reasons. You can go see it as a piece of popcorn fluff, or you can really tap into all the different layers of subtext and the emotional weight that an awful lot of horror films have. It's a form of catharsis, and that's an entire spectrum of why people engage with it. But I think what I like to see myself doing within the sphere of horror is, quite frankly, I think horror is one of the most robust and dynamic forms of social commentary that we have out there. We, as Brian was saying, we can engage in the subtext of so many films, and sometimes it's more overt than others. But we deal with really, really complex themes in a really safe way. So it's kind of almost like a safe space to explore unsafe themes. And I think that when you create a really banging horror film that has all the entertainment aspects to it and people can engage with it in the popcorn fun way, but it also has a really strong message. Arguably, that message is more powerful sometimes than a documentary or somebody giving a speech mm-hmm. because it's the spoonful of sugar with the really, really strong messaging behind it.
Is that then why horror might be having a moment just now when real events in the world are so difficult to grapple with, that horror is the forum really where we can get a handle on things?
Exactly. The world is not a safe space right now. Our Instagram isn't a safe space. And the world is really, really cruel, harsh, and quite frankly gruesome place to be in right now. And I think what people like to do is when they go to watch horror film is that it's contained, it's within a narrative, it's pushing the boundaries, and that's the job of horror, is to absolutely push into extreme places. But it's a safe space, it's a fantastical realm in which we can deal with real world trauma in a very simplistic and safe way.
And we've seen that in history, haven't we? When there have been difficult times, horror goes up.
Absolutely. Across the board. I mean, let's not go back into the 19th and 18th century here, but let's just stay within the 20th century, for example. During the Great Depression in America, there was a massive boom in what's known as the Golden Age of Horror. Then you saw in the 1950s with horror comic books, and you had this internalization of the American dream wasn't working. Suburbia is a lie. It's a fallacy. And you had all these horror comics dealing with the myth of suburbia. And then in the 70s, early 70s on, you had a response to the first televised war in which America were not the good guys during Vietnam. And you had this in all this rise and massive engagement in slasher films. And in the 80s, when everybody was running around and money was God, you had the horror genre go, hang on a second here now, money is not God. And you have fantastic films like John Carpenter's They Live, and in which you're like, guys, we need to actually address what's happening here. And it taps into the zeitgeist of exactly what we are dealing with. And horror does this in a fantastic way.
Well, let's talk again, Brian, a little bit about why the studios love them. I mean, clearly, obviously, you said the budgets are smaller. Does that mean that we have fewer big stars in these types of movies?
Far from it. No, quite the opposite. In fact, like exactly what Sarah was saying there was the fact that because these films can be very, very smart, the talent then are interested in kind of addressing those themes. Like one film that's due to come up pretty soon is called Weapons, and it stars Josh Brolin and Julia Garner. And it's really an allegory for school shootings, you know, that sort of way. It's basically about all these young kids that basically disappear in one night, all from this one classroom. And the whole community is basically trying to come together to figure out what it is. And again, like Sarah was talking about, this is really just an allegory for school shootings and the fact that it exists in a society that allows, you know, lax gun controls. And then everyone wonders, oh, why do these things keep happening? But it's like, here's the reason why, you're doing it yourselves. And again, that's the thing. These films, you know, they do address kind of really deep societal concerns. And actors who want to address those things and want to talk about these things do it. Then for some other actors as well, it's a chance to do something different. Like, I mean, Simon Delaney, our own Simon Delaney, for example, he was in The Conjuring 2 and he was great in it. It was to him.
He's
again.
He's good in everything he did.
Yeah, no, but I mean, that's what I'm saying. You wouldn't think of Simon Delaney being in a horror film. Yeah. And yet there he is, bang smack in the middle of it next to Patrick Wilson and Vera Farmiga. So for actors, it's a chance to kind of do something different, go outside of their comfort zone, but also to address kind of real social concerns.
I just wonder, do we know what it is about us that we want to sit there with our hands over our faces? What itch does it scratch?
I think it scratches a lot of needs for us. I suppose on the surface level, we revel in this idea of the vulnerability of self, because you suppress an awful lot of the fact that you're going to die, that you're vulnerable, that you're a bag of guts walking around the place. You'd never be able to go to Tesco. You'd be paralysed saying, oh my God, I can't cross the road. And what horror does is it taps into us and say, here, come here you now. You know the way you think you're a big fella with your job and your mortgage and your life and your marriage and your fancy car? You are just a vulnerable sack of guts. And we kind of revel in that idea. And it's this idea of memento mori. But it also taps into emotional, complex, unspoken and sometimes intangible feelings that we have about what it means to be human, what it means to be alive in the world. And a recent example, I'm sure, Brian, you've seen it, is Danny Boyle's 28 Years Later. Yeah. I think, you know, whatever you make of the film, the themes in it are absolutely superb, because what it's doing is it's tapping into the zombie, debatable, we won't get into that, the zombie narrative about restoring humanity into the marauding hordes of the infected. And there's a fantastic theme running through that, where we need to start seeing people as human again. And that's what horror kind of conversely does. Everyone thinks horror is about blood and guts and darkness and monsters. And what it's actually doing is holding a mirror up to us and saying, guys, memento mori, remember you're going to die. So make sure you live and make sure that you care about your fellow man.
It's all about how you think about it. Thinking about it differently after all of that. So, Brian, what good ones are coming up?
Yeah, there's a good few. Yeah, so to start off with, we have I Know What You Did Last Summer, which is the sort of legacy sequel from the very famous series. That's out on July 18th. Bring Her Back, which I didn't get to talk about, It stars Sally Hawkins. It's this brilliant psychological horror. Sally Hawkins, of course, was nominated for an Oscar for The Shape of Water. That's out July 26th. Weapons, which I was talking about previously.
It's the Josh Brolin one?
Josh Brolin one. That's out on August 8th. And then Together, which is this great body horror starring Dave Franco and Alice and Brie, and it's all about this young couple that buy a house out in the middle of nowhere but then start to kind of realise that something horrible is underneath the house and maybe it's their relationship.
Which taps into the whole 1950s
there
thing,
you go,
about
yeah.
suburbia being a lie.
Exactly, yeah. So that is out on, pardon my language, yeah, August 15th. So yeah, plenty to come.
Can it ever go too far for you, the horror that you
horror?
See on
no.
screen? Or are you both diehard fans? I
no,
know what
I
your
mean,
answer
would,
is, Sarah.
There's one film I saw, and I'm sure Sarah will know this, and I actually genuinely turned my stomach at the end of it. It's called Society. Do you know that one?
I love it's one of my favorite.
The last 10 minutes of that.
I have the t-shirt of Society.
Oh, great. Well, the last 10 minutes of it, I won't get into it because this is a family show and it's stirring the watershed and all the rest of it. But the last 10 minutes of that film honestly turned my stomach in a way.
But you still
I
watched it.
I still watch it. Oh, of course you'll watch it. This is it. You want to see where your edge is. You know, that's what you want to see where you can kind of your cutoff point is. And I think that film is my cutoff point.
It's one of my favorite films, by the way.
Yeah.
Because what it does is it actually holds a mirror.
It's about Reaganism.
It's about Reaganism and it's about the 1% and actually shown the toxicity that is at the heart of the 1% in terms of how it deals with everybody else. But just in response to your answer, Claire, horror can't go too far from a macro perspective because that's its job. And people often talk about horror having this desensitizing effect on society, whereas the argument actually is the reverse. Life desensitizes us as we scroll on our phones and we look at images, and horror turns around and goes, guys, we need to push the envelope to actually make you feel and make you realize that you're alive in this world and you need to be human.
It makes a lot of sense, Sarah. Thank you so much, Sarah and Brian. We better take a quick break before the news.